Thank you. My name is Jessica Garcia. I'm 25 years old. Today's Tuesday, June 8th. I'm in Stanton, Virginia, and I'm here today with my coworker and friend, Joy Ingram.
My name is Joy Ingram. I'm 44 years old. Today is Tuesday, June 8th, 2021. We're in Stanton, Virginia, and I'm here with my co-worker, Jessica Garcia. She's my co-worker and friend.
So, Joy, I'm so excited that we get to do this.
Yes.
I guess my first question for you is, start from the beginning for us, where you're from and your family.
I was born in Hawaii, but I grew up in Georgia, partly in Rome, Georgia, partly in Atlanta, Georgia. I have a very large, blended, and extended family, mother, father, stepmother, stepfather, step-siblings, all kinds of folks in the family, lots of aunts, uncles, cousins. I have extended family here in Stanton, Virginia, godmother, and a whole host of siblings there, nieces, nephews, all that. So I have a really, really large family.
Yeah. Cool. And I guess with your family, maybe it's not a family member, but who's had the biggest impact on your life?
Absolutely my mother. My mother was a fighter. She was a survivor. She was like my biggest supporter, my biggest advocate. She advocated for my life before I got here. She advocated for my life ever since I came into the world. She made sure I had everything I needed and a good deal of what I wanted as well. She was a leader. She was a protector. She was a provider. She was nurturer, teacher, caregiver, support person, friend. She was everything.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I guess that brings me to my next question. I'm glad you said that. So the work we do advocacy. It's not always easy. It can be very difficult to help. You know, working with survivors of intimate partner violence, sexual assault, stalking, human trafficking. It's a lot, but we do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know, you know, what led you to do this work? Because, you know, we work side by side every day. And I think knowing why we do this work is so important.
Yes. I think for me, what led me to do this work is basically I'm a survivor. I'm a survivor of both sexual assault and intimate partner violence. I was raped when I was 14 years old. At the time, I didn't understand what had happened to me, so I didn't tell anyone. I didn't talk to anyone about it, and for a very long time, I felt alone. And then about 7 years after my rape, I came across a pamphlet for a local rape crisis center in DeKalb County, in Decatur, Georgia, and I went, and I feel like that agency saved my life, and me doing this work is my way of giving back, because I just feel like what I went through when I was going through my victimhood, going from a victim to a survivor, going through that for years, feeling like I was alone. I don't want anyone else to have to go through it like that. You know, I wish, I hope, I pray for a world where sexual violence and intimate partner violence don't exist. But until then, I just want to do my part to make sure anyone who goes through this doesn't have to suffer through it alone.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah, because no one should have to go through something like that alone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we've both been advocates for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in this field a while. And do you have any memories of, like, a time where you got to advocate for somebody that was, like, really powerful or meaningful to you? And you take a moment to think, because I know that's a big one. We've served many times over the years.
We've served a lot. I think one of the ones or one of the situations that really sticks out to me isn't, I guess, so much the Well, there's one victim in particular. She was a young girl. I went to the hospital to advocate for her. She was a sexual assault victim.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I remember sitting in the room listening to her tell her story, mm-hmm. and her story sounded a lot like my own. And I remember, even though she was young, she was an adult, but she was very young, very childlike. And I just remember hoping that she had support at home as well. And it did come to find out she did seem to have support at home. Her father was very supportive of her. But it just touched me. I was really concerned about her. It was very triggering, you know, because like I said, her story mirrored mine in a lot of ways. But another thing that touched me doing this work was there was one particular time when I felt like maybe I wasn't cut out for this work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really thinking about walking away from it. Because I remember sitting outside the shelter one day, just thinking, what the hell am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing. I'm doing this all wrong. I can't be the right person for this. You know, and I'm just like, I don't know. Why am I here? And I came in that day, and I remember speaking to a resident, and she told me, she said, you know, all of y'all are great people, and y'all do great work, she said, and everybody tries so hard. She was like, but you get it. You really get it.
Mm.
And in that moment, I was like,
yeah.
Okay, I should stick around a little longer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think those moments make the big difference
mm-hmm.
for us in our work, is getting to see the survivor on the other end
yeah.
of things. Because we do. We're going in the moment of crisis, and that can bring out so many emotions. We don't always get closure either.
Right.
Like some jobs, you know, you don't, some they get more closure perhaps in getting to see where their clients go. But sometimes,
yeah.
you know, with us doing crisis work, especially for the domestic violence survivors, it's hard.
It is.
We don't always get to see the outcome. Did they actually leave their abuser? Are they safe? For you, especially working in the shelter of survivors, it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, their life beyond here, it's always sometimes a question.
Right, right.
I know I recently bumped into some of our clients for a year or two ago, and I never expected to see them again, but they're doing really good.
That's
she
good.
Got her own apartment.
Good,
she's
good.
On her own. She's been in therapy. So it's been nice seeing
yeah.
her first positive.
That
things.
Is awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
And I think it's interesting you said your mom was your biggest advocate.
She was.
So
she was.
Was there a time where you can remember distinctly with her advocating for you, like maybe at school or another part of life?
Actually, yes, I do. I remember when I was in the ninth grade, I switched school district.
Mm-hmm.
And all of my life, I've been in gifted programs. I'd make straight A's. I'd been in accelerated programs, advanced classes. So when I went to this new school district, they tried to put me in basic everything.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was just not having it. And
yeah.
she came up to the school system, to the school, and she told him, she was like, you know, we're like one county over from the school she was in,
yeah.
And her standardized test scores are still the standardized test scores that kids take all over the country.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
But she got it. I was placed in the proper classes, and I only ended up doing a year of high school there, and then I actually kind of skipped the rest and went to college, so, you know, see, yeah, her advocating for me made a big difference.
I bet. So when did you go to college? How old were you?
I was 15.
Wow.
Yeah.
So young.
Yeah.
That's
I was really young.
Especially as a woman of color.
Yeah.
Like, I bet that was huge. That probably felt like you know, as a black young girl going to college, I bet that probably presented some challenges, but also some great gifts at the same time.
It was.
It
was a lot. I think it was a great opportunity. I think my mother recognized that, and a lot of people were like, you know, she's going away to school so far from home.
Yeah.
And I'm sure my mom was concerned about that because, I was her miracle baby, and it's like she's sending me away so young. But that's when I met my godmother here, and, you know, she and her whole family basically took me in and looked after me and watched out for me and things like that. And it's also, it was in going to school early, and at that particular school, that I came to understand that the sexual assault that had happened to me when I was 14 was actually rape. Because as part of the freshman orientation, we had to see a play on date rape. And that's when I came to fully understand, you know, what had happened to me. So it was like, I learned a lot of other things besides reading, writing, and arithmetic my first year of college.
That's so powerful because, you know, I think of how many other teenagers that haven't hit that yet. We don't talk about that in school typically. Like, how many of them have abuse that they haven't processed?
Right, right. And it's interesting because as part of my advocacy work now, I reached out to the program at that college that I attended, and we talked to them about the younger students and them possibly experiencing sexual assault while on campus, as well as before they even get to school, and what protocols we can put in place to make sure they get the help and the services that they need.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So just not being reactive to, like, things happening on the campus, but really helping the survivors that are already there.
I'm sure there are a lot of kids who come in because, you know, sexual assault is so prevalent, especially with younger kids. And if kids don't, you know, don't know what it is that's going on, don't know who to turn to, don't know who to tell, don't feel like they have a trusted person that they can confide in, you know, I want us to be able to help provide them with the safe spaces so that they can begin healing.
Yeah, I love that. Prevention is the best method.
It is. It is.
Violence. It is, because if not, if we don't address it, then they end up in our offices.
Right, right.
And it breaks my heart when we sometimes get clients and you go, you mentioned your story about in the hospital accompaniment with that sexual assault survivor. It's like, who's this per system? And sometimes people only have us.
Yeah, sometimes we are the only support system that they have.
And sometimes that's a lot on us too, because I mean, they're bearing the trauma with them. And I think a lot of people don't even know about advocates until something does happen to them. Was there ever a time with an advocate in this field that we work in where they helped you too? Sometimes advocates advocate for other advocates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. For me, when I came to this work, working at a dual agency, before I got here, I'd done volunteer hotline work on a rape crisis line.
Yeah.
So I was familiar with sexual assault. I was nowhere near as familiar with intimate partner violence. I thought domestic violence was the woman with the black eye and the busted lip. I knew nothing about the psychological abuse. I didn't know about financial abuse. I didn't know about verbal abuse and all. I didn't know about those things.
Yeah.
And so coming to this work, I was completely uninformed and naive about domestic violence. Well, once I got to this agency and started doing this work and learned more about domestic violence, that's when I came to understand that I had been a victim of domestic violence. You know, he never hit me, so I'm like, I'm not a victim, you know, but when I look back at the things he did, the patterns of manipulation and the way he tried to control me and things like that, I realized that what he did was, in fact, abusive. And I remember one of the initial feelings I had about it was I was angry. I was really angry because I was like, how did I let that happen to me? You know, I was too smart for that. I'm not a weak woman. How did that happen to me?
Right.
And I had to deal with the feelings of anger and the feelings of guilt and learn to understand that domestic violence is something that can happen to anyone. And I sat and actually had a session with Claudia, and, you know, she really helped me kind of sort through some of the emotions that I was having behind that situation, because I was an angry bird.
Understandably, just the violence. I mean, we see that all the time. There's some emotions that come after violence that we don't even process easily until we talk to somebody.
Right.
And it's tough sometimes. It really is. And I think that's the one thing about advocacy that's really powerful. And one of the reasons I admire you so much is that it takes a lot to do advocacy, but it takes even more to do advocacy when you're a survivor yourself.
Yeah.
And you're fighting and helping the very same people that have been hurt the same way as you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of like, I don't know, I feel like I'm walking into a fire sometimes. And it's like, I already know this burns, you know, but I'm walking in here anyway because someone's in here and someone needs help and I'm going to go in and help them.
Yeah. And not just help them, but help them put out the fire,
right,
too.
Right, right.
And say that, yeah, yeah. Advocacy is so powerful.
It is.
We see a lot of changes. And, wow, it's just crazy. I guess this is kind of on the sidelines of advocacy, but one question I did want to ask you, maybe this might be family, it might be, like, in the work, but who has been the kindest to you in your life? Because, you know, I hear you're so kind to so many other people, but who's shown you the most kindness?
The most kindness?
And take a minute to think about that, because I know there's probably been a lot of people that you've came in touch with throughout your life.
Mm-hmm. I think probably one of the people who's been the kindest to me, I would have to say, is my godmother, Claire Sheffy. Because I met her when I first came to school here when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
I met her at church.
Wow.
She invited me and another young woman home for dinner, and we've been family ever since. Her door was always open to us.
Mm-hmm.
We could always go to her house for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. If we needed anything, she always gave us what we needed. She never asked for anything in return. She took us in and treated us like we were her own children. And when I moved back to Stanton in 2016, I had a home in her house. I didn't have to pay any bills.
Yeah.
You know, again, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because yeah, she cooks all the time. You know, she
yeah,
gave me love. She gave me family.
Mm-hmm.
She gave me home. She fed my belly. She fed my spirit. She fed my mind. She's just been great and giving and selfless and loving and compassionate. And, you know, she's always there when I need her. And she didn't have to be. I was a total stranger.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like a stray cat. You know,
yeah, yeah,
and she totally took me in.
Yeah, that community is just so important.
Yeah.
Getting that from other people, getting that love from other people in the community is really important.
Yeah.
That's what I'm learning with the advocacy, especially is like with the victims we work with. It's like some of these people have never been shown love.
Mhm.
So like getting that from a community member, I think that's really, not always valued as much.
Yeah, it is, and it's crazy because when she introduces me to people, she introduces me as her daughter.
Yeah.
Nobody questions it. You know, she's lived
yeah,
in this community forever. She's 82 years old, and it's like all of a sudden you pop up and you've got this new daughter. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because she welcomes me in
yeah,
that everyone else welcomes me in
yeah,
as well. So, yeah,
yeah,
she's been my rock.
Yeah, people that make those spaces for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny you say stuff like that because I think of you very much in those terms. Like, all those things you're listing off, all those positive qualities, you have those too.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I feel like, and I try to do it, it's a thing of, you know, people have given me so much in my life
mm-hmm,
that, you know, I know that I can never pay it back.
Yeah.
I know I can never pay it all back.
Mm-hmm.
So I try in everything I do to pay it forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can be the blessing that someone else, to someone else, that a person has been to me, then I feel like I've done a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. And you're paying it forward every day with this work.
Well, thank you.
I think so. And, yeah, yeah. Because sometimes it's tough. Sometimes you always don't get
yeah,
to the end result.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long term, I know we're making a big difference.
Yeah.
I see it. Yeah. Along those lines, how would you like to be remembered?
How would I like to be remembered?
I already know people one day I'm going to be like, I remember Joy for being a joy.
That's a good thing because I was not always a joy. Coming through, I've been through a lot of things. And at one point in my life, I was a very bitter person.
Mm.
I was really
yeah,
bitter and I was not a joy.
I was
not. So for people to be able to say that is a great thing. I think I want to be remembered as a person who just, I don't know, tried to spread love and joy. That's what I want to be remembered for. Someone who, you know, when I went places, I tried to build and create and not destroy.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to help others be happy and just spread happiness wherever I can go.
I love that. I think that's the crux of advocacy, building that love and joy with people. I really do. Yeah. Because I think so often people think they see what we do and they're like, oh, we respond and help victims. But it's not just that. We're trying to give them a life after violence.
Yeah.
I think some people are so focused on what happened to them, they don't think about the long term.
Yeah.
You know, these are people with lives to live.
Exactly.
And we want them to live them happily.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Love and peace.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. And then I'm bouncing around my questions a little bit. Let's see. I like this one. How has your life been different than what you imagined?
Oh my gosh.
But there's been a lot of difference. I bet you never thought you'd be in this work.
No, I did not. I did not.
It's like any little kid is like, I'm going to be an advocate when I go.
No. I came back to Stanton in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Atlanta, and I tell people I was having a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
I was working at a Fortune 500 engineering firm as an administrative assistant, and it was an okay gig. The benefits were great. The pay was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I was miserable.
Mm.
I was miserable. I would, you know, Sunday nights it seemed like I would get sick because I did not want to go to work Monday morning.
Yeah.
I would drive to work Monday morning, and before I go in the building, sometimes it got to the point I would sit in my car and cry.
Oh, wow.
Because I did not want to go to work. I just hated it. I was miserable.
Yeah, stuck in the grind, it sounds
Yes. So I decided, you know, I wanted to leave, had no real clue what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go. So I called my godmother one day, my godmother here. And I'm on the phone in tears. I'm just like, I'm sick of Atlanta. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know where to go, where I want to go. And my life is miserable. It sucks. It's so terrible.
And she probably bounced back right back at you. Like,
yes.
What?
And she was just like, come home.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? She's like, come home.
Mm,
you know, yeah. She's like, you have a home here. Come home. And so I thought about it. You know, it didn't take long. I was like, well, okay.
Yeah.
So I decided I would come here. The plan was come here, stay for a few months, then get my bearings and find a job in Florida near the beach.
Oh.
That's where I wanted to go, Florida, yeah. Going to the beach. Right? Came up here, went to the African American Heritage Festival, and saw a table for New Direction Center.
Oh, wow.
Walked up to the table, saw what they were about. Like, you know, I'm going to be here for a couple of months. Maybe I could, you know, do a little volunteer work, maybe get a part-time job, save up a little extra cash for me to go. You know, I had my money to move or whatever, but maybe, you know, you can always do with a little extra money.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked about a job, and the then executive director asked me, well, what do you want to do?
Wow.
I never thought about it.
Yeah.
Never given it any thought whatsoever. But just off the cuff, I said, I want to write, and I want to help people.
Yeah.
And so she was like, well, I might have a position. Send me your resume, and we'll see. I sent her my resume, and I've been with New Direction Center basically ever since.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I never planned on getting into this work. And again, the plan was to leave in, like, December. I was planning to celebrate New Year's in Florida.
Right.
I've been here now for about 5 years.
Wow.
I fell in love with the work.
Yeah.
I feel like I will do this work in some form until the day I die.
Yeah.
You know, all through retirement, I don't care if I open a little bookstore by the beach, there will be domestic violence pamphlets.
Yeah.
And there we'll have conversations about, you know, I'll be doing this advocacy work in some form until I die.
Yeah. You know, as challenging as it can be sometimes, I'm so grateful to this work because I feel like we do get to do what we love in life. We do. Like you said, we get to spread that love and joy.
Yeah.
And I do think you'll be doing that the day you die. I think we both will be.
Yeah.
And I think 10 years from now, I'm thinking I'm going to be visiting you at your bookstore.
Yes.
I had a feeling that you might even have your own book for sale there.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
And who knows, maybe we'll be in advocacy a whole new
Yeah.
Adventures.
Yeah.
It'd be cool.
That would be cool.
It'd be cool. I think it's really interesting too. You talk about your godmother telling you to come home. I feel like with our advocacy as well, that's like something very powerful. Because especially for the domestic violence victims we work with, they don't have a home to go to.
Right.
So a lot of times we're teaching people how to make a home.
Right.
And I think it's really
Right.
amazing that when you came here at only 15, keep in mind, going to college, that you had to find a new home in a way.
I did. I did. And she
Yeah.
gave me that. She
Yeah.
gave me, she just, she gave me a whole home, a whole new family, because it was like, you know, and like I've never seen that before. Like the whole family
Yeah.
just kind of took us in.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess my next question would be, what communities here have like made a big impact on you? Because I think we all find like our groups. Like I've found a lot of care and love with the Latina community here. I have some people. I don't get to see my grandmother much because she's all the way in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So like there's an older lady that lives in our neighborhood and she's from El Salvador, and I'll go visit her and she'll make me some food that I would get like at home, and it's like it's really nice to have that community. Yeah.
It is. It's wild because like community is so many different things.
Yeah.
It can be defined in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And I've met and connected with so many different people in so many different communities. So, one Ebenezer Baptist Church, has been great to
Yeah.
me. The organization, lots of organizations, because of the outreach work that I do, like Thawcan, Rise,
Yes.
the LGBTQ Center,
Yeah.
DuPont Community Credit Union. You would not think
Yeah.
of like your financial institution as community, but because I worked there, you
Yeah.
know, for part of the time, obviously, they are my community and they are a giving and loving community.
Yeah.
So I've got lots of community here. The people at WARM, the New Direction Center is my community.
Yeah.
So it's lots of community.
Yeah. And I don't know, I think it's cool with advocacy that we get to take that community, and there's always an advocate in every group. I feel like there's always someone willing to go to fight for their cause.
Yeah.
And I think you've done something really special with our work in that. You see all those causes and you find a way to work all of them in together because they are
Yeah.
really connected.
They are.
They are,
They
at least with our
are.
financial institutions. If we have a cyber needing money, that's something we have
Yeah.
to work on. If they need help learning how to do bills for the
Right.
first time,
Right.
or if they need housing, knowing who can help with that, knowing landlords, knowing community members that are willing to pitch in, churches, other agencies. Yeah. Like you said, the LGBTQ Center, oh, I love them.
Yes,
They've been a great resource. And just, yeah, powerful.
it is.
Where do you see your community in 10 years? Do you think you'll still be here? Or do you think you'll be in Florida?
You know, I don't know. I'll probably be 10 years, probably Atlanta or Florida.
Yeah.
Those are the places that, like, I love the beach. I'm just a beach bum.
Yeah.
And
Me too.
Florida, like the beach in Destin, Florida, oh my
Yeah.
gosh, probably one of the world's most beautiful beaches.
Yeah.
But Atlanta's my home.
Yeah.
It's my home. And I miss it. At times, don't tell anybody I actually said it, but sometimes I even miss traffic.
I call them traffic moments where you get to sit in your car and it's annoying, but you pretend to be annoyed because now you can also take a podcast and
Yeah,
sit
and I
and
mean
decompress.
it's just part of the culture. It's Atlanta.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it. I'll take it. But yeah, I think 10 years from now, you know, I don't know where I'll be. I'd like to be kind of doing this sort of work in a different capacity, maybe as like a consultant,
Yeah.
with different agencies, doing workshops, because I
Yeah.
love doing workshops.
Yeah.
Possibly, like you said, with the book out.
Yeah.
I would love to just have like a bookstore. I feel like I need to find a way to combine books, coffee, and wine and the beach.
Yeah.
And that would be like my life.
Yeah. So I know we're getting short on time. This is my last question for you, Joy. You
Okay.
ready?
Yep.
What does storytelling mean to you as a survivor?
Storytelling to me as a survivor means giving others something that they can relate to, mm-hmm. something that they can hold on to, something that they can grasp almost like a teddy bear or a security blanket when they need hope, when they need a reminder mm-hmm. sometimes that they can do this, that even when times are hard, they can pull through this. I want it to be a way of them to be reminded that someone else pulled through, you know, and I'm no greater than them. I pull through, they can pull through. They got this.
Yeah. They deserve a life after the violence.
Yeah. A great life.
Yeah. I mean, hope is not lost. It's there.
It is not.
And I think it's not. I think community members like you give them that home too.
Mm-hmm.
Especially working at a shelter for domestic violence systems. I think that was huge because we're literally giving them a home.
Yeah.
But all the things that come with a physical home, all the emotional things too,
mm-hmm.
security.
Yeah.
Somebody to talk to, a figure and know if they can look to for advice.
Yeah. That reminds me, I've got flowers I need to put together and bring out here for.
Oh my God, I have plants at our office too. Have you seen my plants at the Swing Girl?
I have not.
I can look at them.
Okay.
Growing things.
Yeah.
I think that's all I have. Unless, is there anything else that you want to?
I don't think so. I want to thank you for this opportunity. This has been fun. I'm always happy to talk about advocacy work and helping survivors. It is my passion.
Yes, ma'am. And we've had many lunches together.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're having more recent great convo.
Yeah.
We have to start talking about you writing a book. I know, right?
Right. Yeah. That's been a thing that's been in the works for years. And
yeah.
I have no excuse for it not to happen now. So.
Awesome. Cool. So thank you, Joy.
Thank you, Jess.